Welcome back to the clubhouse here in the McAdoo studios. Hour two rolling along, still joined here in the studio by Will Stewart and Chris Coleman of TechSideline.com. Follow them on Twitter at Chris Coleman TSL and at Will Stewart TSL. You can also follow TechSideline at TechSideline. All right, fellas, any thoughts on FIFA and Sepp Blatter? No?
I've not read about that at all, man. You know, I was on vacation and I get back and I was 3 hours late seeing that Bill Foster died, and I saw some stuff on Twitter about FIFA, and I was like, I have no idea what's going on, so somebody would have to explain that to me.
Well, you know what, I'll be honest with you, because I think last summer there was so much interest in the U.S.'s run in the World Cup, right? And you have the American Outlaws now across the countries, all these chapters in every city, and there's this heightened interest in international soccer and U.S. involvement there. But still, even with that kind of momentum, I'm not sure there would have been as much interest in what happened if it hadn't been the United States that went after FIFA here. If it hadn't been the FBI and the Department of Justice that, you know, were kicking down doors and yanking out FIFA officials. The U.S. was the spearhead here, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And I think it made the story more interesting. So anyway, I was just joking about that. I'm glad you said Bill Foster, though.
Yeah.
I was not around, not in the sense that I was paying attention. But I wasn't around to watch Bill Foster, to watch his teams. I know I have a lot of friends that played for Bill Foster. You know, guys like Damon Watlington and Sean Good have become very good friends of mine over the years. So I hear the stories. But Will, you especially, I know we're you know, dialed in during that time.
I was a big time fan back
then. You know, that was a really good era for Virginia Tech basketball.
It was. It wasn't built to last. He coached here 5 years, I think. Maybe six.
Six. From 91 to 97, right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. And he had a really good recruiting class early on where he brought in like eight guys, and I think seven of them wound up contributing. You know, and that was the core of the guys that won the NIT and went to the NCAA. I remember several things. You know, when you mentioned Bill Foster, several things come to mind. Virginia Tech had just finished up with Frankie Allen, and that was a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first time that I heard Bill Foster do a post-game interview, it was a breath of fresh air because Roth asked him, you know, about the game. And Foster broke down why Virginia Tech lost. He knew exactly what had happened. And Frankie never seemed to know why what happened. You know? And I was just listening to Foster.
That's an indictment, huh?
Wow, this guy actually knows his basketball. And he was a very good X's and O's coach, but he kind of coasted as far as recruiting went for the last 4 or 5 years, you know. But the other thing I remember about him is as Virginia Tech started to get really good, I don't remember what year it was he said this, but I remember he's doing an interview one night after a game, and I don't remember what brought this up, but he said, you know, I'm still waiting for Castle Coliseum to be full. And he looked at the camera and he said, I mean, really full. And I just remember I guess he'd been hearing about how great the fans were, and he was finally winning games. And I think it irked him a little bit that the place wasn't full, you know, and I remember that. But he was a sharp guy. He had a self-deprecating sense of humor, just a good guy to have around.
Yeah.
You know? He did kind of ride on the guys he brought in that first class. So, you know, I interviewed Dave Brain about it, and Dave, and this was just 2 or 3 years ago, Dave was satisfied with the Bill Foster tenure, even though it kind of, you know, wasn't great at the end, and Hussey wasn't left with a whole lot to work with and all that. You know, I think the perception, particularly on Dave's part, was that Foster accomplished what he was brought in to do, which was make the program respectable. And he made it more than respectable. I mean, I wrote today on our message board that 95 NIT and the 96 NCAA, that was Virginia Tech's only postseason play in 18 years of basketball. If they hadn't done those 2 years, they'd have gone 18 years without even playing in the NIT.
That's a rough stretch.
That is a rough stretch, man. You know, I remember my first basketball game was during the Bill Foster era. It was the 96 game against UMass.
Okay.
When UMass was
number
one.
The Camby team?
Yeah, it was Camby, Carmelo Travieso, that whole group. And Virginia Tech was ranked number 10 in the country. And that was my first ever college basketball game. First ever basketball game at Virginia Tech.
Wow.
I don't remember a lot of the
stuff. That's a hell of an indoctrination into college basketball.
It was. Yeah. I mean, a packed castle. Back when the students were actually across from the benches, like in sections 11 through 13, 9, 11, and 13.
Yeah. Yeah. 9 and 11 are in the middle. Yeah.
It was very impressive for somebody who was 13 years old. And really, that was the golden age of Virginia Tech athletics that year. I mean, if you think about it, going to the Sugar Bowl, beating Texas in the Sugar Bowl, then going to the NCAA tournament, being ranked in the top 10 in basketball, I mean, that might have been the golden year.
Teal wrote about that in his most recent column, about Foster. He talked about that day that Dave Brain had paid Wright State to back up to earlier in the day. That was Bill Foster's 500th career win.
Yeah,
and then later that night, literally across town, Frank Beamer and the Hokies beat Texas 28-10 in the Sugar Bowl. One of the better days in the history of VT athletics.
They actually paid Wright State to move the game from Blacksburg to New Orleans.
Right.
It was supposed to be in Blacksburg, but Brain was like, oh, goodness, nobody's going to be in Blacksburg. Like, our whole staff is going down there.
Right.
There's not going to be anybody here to turn the lights on in Castle Coliseum.
And so Tech had 4,000 fans in attendance for that basketball game in New Orleans.
The Sugar Bowl in New Orleans, which is pretty good stuff.
Pretty awesome stuff.
I was there. It was great.
You were there at the game.
Yeah. And I remember in 95-96, Virginia Tech got as high as 8th in the rankings in basketball. And Sports Illustrated ran an article. Its primary focus was Virginia Tech basketball, but it was really about Virginia Tech athletics in general and how they had won the Sugar Bowl, in December of 95. And then they had risen to the top 8 in men's basketball in probably February of that year.
Mm-hmm.
That was back before the internet got wound up. So if you were in a feature article on Sports Illustrated, that was big time coverage.
Oh yeah,
it absolutely was, and they actually mentioned Virginia Tech, a national championship, in the same sentence in basketball in that article. If we're talking about the same article, Bill Foster's birthday I think was like on April 30th, which was the same day as the national championship game that year, and they had a quote in there from him saying, "Yeah, it'd be really great to still be playing basketball on my birthday." So the part of that article was talking about Virginia Tech potentially playing for the national championship in basketball.
Yeah.
Talking about the same program that we see today, right?
Yeah, it's hard to believe.
And I don't mean to be, a jerk about that, but that's a long, it's a long, long way away from what we're looking at or what we've been seeing for the past couple of years, no doubt. But
yeah, and then Kentucky was as good back then as they were this year.
Yeah.
They were the best team in the country that year.
Virginia Tech always gets tough breaks on seeding.
Virginia Tech got an 8 or 9 seed, got matched up against Wisconsin Green Bay, probably, I think it was.
Yeah.
And then whoever wins that gets to play Kentucky in the second round, and that went about like you would expect it.
Not only did we get the 8-9 game, but just a little extra slap in the face, or you're the 9 seed. We were ranked in the top 25. Had been in the top 10.
Tech at the time was ranked 16th in the country,
and got a nine seed in the
tournament.
That's unthinkable today.
Yeah.
That's unthinkable.
Yeah.
I mean, it should have been a 4 seed, a 3 seed maybe, but I don't know.
Well, and back then they were coming out of the Atlantic 10. That was an Atlantic 10 year, not a Metro. They were coming out of the Atlantic 10, and that was before the committee fell in love with the mid-major conferences like the A-10, mm-hmm. So I think the perception back then was that the A-10 was weak, yada, yada, yada. So that was their justification for the ninth seed.
Oh, these days they jump the chance to give that team a 4 seed or a 5 seed or a 6 seed or something like that. While making, the NC States and or whoever of the world play a play-in game or something.
Yeah. Right. It's college basketball changed drastically, without question. Chris Coleman, Will Stewart, TechSideline.com here in the McAdoo studios with us. I was just quickly, a couple minutes left in this segment. We got more to get to the next one, but I think it looks like the SEC spring meetings are taking place, right? So everyone's going crazy about what's coming out of the SEC spring meetings. There has never been a more boring event covered by that much media, I don't think, in the history of sports. I could be wrong about that, but it is what it is. And so it sounds like the SEC is not crazy or not leaning toward taking action on the graduate transfer rule. That's what it sounds like. Now, there could be some misinformation there, but what they are talking about is the SEC is going to restrict transfers on players with serious misconduct. I can actually get behind this, and it sounds like there might be some movement to make this across the Power Five, encouraging the other four Power Five conferences to do the same. I'm all about this. We saw the recent debacle there at Alabama with Nick Saban and him bringing in a kid from who had been kicked out of Georgia, and wasn't long before he was kicked out of Alabama as well. Mm-hmm. I'm all for giving kids second chances, but when you're talking about serious misconduct issues, I can get behind this.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can get behind that, I think.
So give me some examples. Would that have included Cam Newton back in the day?
Or Auburn's quarterback from this past season, wasn't it?
Nick Marshall?
Yeah, Nick Marshall.
Well, the proposal defines serious misconduct as sexual assault, domestic violence, stalking, dating violence, or other forms of physical violence. SEC okay. presidents and chancellors took a straw poll on Thursday prior to a formal vote today.
So
it has gone through. The vote has been approved. So, you know, we're not talking about, you know, the theft of a laptop necessarily. We're talking about serious.
So we're basically talking about beating somebody up, murder, or rape.
Yeah, there are no victim. There are no victimless crimes listed here.
Right.
You know,
okay.
So it doesn't sound like victimless crimes. Well, not that theft is a victimless crime, but we're talking about serious,
physical,
you know, assaults,
yes,
and things like that. These are things that I can totally get behind, because, look, you commit sexual assault at the University of, I don't know, let's say Oklahoma, you know, and Oklahoma State should not even be thinking about rolling the dice on you.
Yeah, right.
You
and
know?
You're found guilty in the court of law.
Oh, my God.
Then, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're likely going to jail in that scenario anyway.
Don't give that staff the opportunity to bring you in.
No. Yeah. I mean, the football's got enough image issues right now.
Right.
This is one of those things the SEC's doing that I think everyone should jump on board with.
You know, especially since this is the college game. I mean, when you look at the NFL, I mean, if a franchise wants to sign, I mean, they're their own business. Like, if a business wants to sign a criminal mm-hmm. to a contract, or if Food Lion wants to hire a criminal, that, you know, they should be able to do that within their own rights.
Sure.
But you know, in the college game, man, you know, it's one thing letting in athletes that, you know, a lot of them probably wouldn't be getting into these schools to begin with.
Sure.
But to let them in after they're found guilty of violent crimes, I mean, that's too much in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
So what does this rule say? It's they're going to restrict transfers of kids who have been found guilty of those sorts of offenses?
Yeah, I mean, the proposal is to ban players from transferring within the conference if they have been disciplined for serious misconduct. So it's not mm-hmm. to say that you couldn't go from Georgia to TCU.
Okay. Right.
You know, but if this catches on and the other four Power Five conferences, you know, come to a conclusion that this is that they're in agreement here, then nobody's taking these kids. And I'm all for it.
For it too.
There are lots of Division II and Division III programs out there that they can probably, you know, fall into if those coaches are willing to take the chance.
But, well, this will put everybody else on Georgia's level, which is probably the cleanest program. Mark Richt's probably the cleanest guy in the SEC as far as stuff like that goes.
I would think so.
Yeah.
But I mean, by what measure? It's just, you know, you're going to fire up some Tennessee fans, you're going to fire up some Kentucky fans, and I don't want any part of that this afternoon. So let's take a break. We got more to get to with Chris Coleman and Will Stewart of TechSideline.com. Keep it locked to Super Sports 101.7.